Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. First up, massive thank you to everyone that's been in touch since our last episode with KJ Sharp. And also a big thank you to KJ for coming on the show and also for taking time to hang out in our Facebook group afterwards and answer questions. If you want to join the Facebook group, you can. Just look for MTB Performance Tips and Tricks on Facebook or head to facebook.com/groups/MTB Performance and get involved in the discussions. If you haven't listened to the episode with KJ, give it a go. It's a good one. There's some great nutrition stuff in there. I know I've been trying her breakfast pancake recipe and loving that. Don't forget, we've got some great episodes in the back catalogue with people like Aaron Gwynn and Tani Seagrave. So if you haven't listened to all of our episodes so far, head to downtimepodcast.com/episodes and catch up. Also, while you're there, you can subscribe to the podcast and join our newsletter on the /subscribe page. And if you want to show your support for the podcast, you can grab a t-shirt by hitting up downtimepodcast.com/shop. Don't forget to give us a follow on social media. We're at Downtime Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and at Downtime Tweets on Twitter. Alrighty, this week we've got another great guest for you. It's EWS pinner Greg Callahan. We took some time out with Greg in a random office at Fort William World Cup and sat down and had a good chat about some of the sacrifices that it takes to get to the top of the sport, his tips on bike setup, some of the mental cues that he uses, and much, much more. So without further ado, here's Greg Callahan. Greg Callahan, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. That's a noisy chair that I'm sat on. thanks for coming on, man. We're here at Fort Williams, the Downhill World Cup. Thanks for taking time out. I'm sure there's plenty of people looking for a bit of your time this weekend.
No, thanks for having me. I listened to the podcast and I really like it, so it's good. Cool. to be on it.
Nice one. So before we get stuck into the riding side of things, we got in touch over coffee, right? I was envious of your coffee machine on an Instagram post. So it seems to be like a big thing for a lot of riders, eh? So
yeah, there's a big coffee culture going on now. And that's kind of how it started for me. Like, I just was seeing everyone with them, and then my teammate Gusty has one, and I spent some time at his house, and I left. I just missed it straight away. I was like, right, I need to invest.
Sweet. So what have you gone for?
It's Alex Duetto, Italian one.
Nice. Dual boiler.
Yeah. Rotary engine, all the bells and whistles.
Very nice. So you're happy. You got good barista skills?
I'm getting better. They're not great. Yeah. My art isn't great. My textures and all that are good. But
yeah, getting there. You had any tips off the Rocky Mountain boys? I think Remy's had a course in latte art. So.
Yeah, I think Remy's in the lead there, definitely.
Good stuff. So Fort William, tell us a bit about what brings you here this weekend.
Yeah, so I wasn't really planning on coming. And then last week I was asked to come do some promotional stuff for the Red Bull Fox Hunt. So I was like, yeah, sweet, I'll do that. And then may as well hang out for the weekend, bring my bike, and I can still ride and train while I'm here, and then get to catch up with people, watch the race, and learn a bit really as well, because you know it's a different sport, but they're doing pretty much the same thing as us, so it's quite interesting to watch from the sidelines.
Cool. So you've been up on the track watching the racing and
I'm watching practice, and I'll go watch qualies now as well.
How does it feel watching people on still a bike but quite a different bike on pretty rough, pretty gnarly track?
It's really interesting actually, because like I wouldn't even be used to seeing downhill bikes in action, so it's amazing just what they can handle and how aggressive the guys ride them, and the pounding that they're giving the bikes, and the riders as well. Like, it's really cool to watch the different techniques and different styles, and it's cool. It definitely makes me wish I was racing, to be honest, because when you see someone do something, you want to kind of wonder how you could do it.
Is it something you think you would ever have a go? I know Martin Mays is here this weekend. He's entered the downhill race, so
absolutely. Like, I'm getting a downhill bike in a couple of weeks. I'm gonna do the Crankworx Innsbruck race. I'll spend a bit of time out this summer and kind of see how it goes. I would definitely like to do some. I nearly ended up going to Cairns World Champs last year.
So
the team kind of said to me, like, oh, that could be a good track and enduro bike, as Sam Hill proved. If you want to go, you can. And I said, geez, that'd be great, but I'll focus on enduro, and if I'm having a good season, I won't, because it's before the end of our season. And if I was having a bad season, I would go, but I was having a good year, so...
Well, maybe next time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
more opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the joys of being Irish. There's not too many people fighting for the team.
So okay, so it's easier to get a qualification place and get on the team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So would you have had to get some points from somewhere? Would you have had to have done another event, or could you literally get straight onto the team?
I'm not totally sure, to be honest. I'd say I could probably sweet talk my way straight in, but I think I'd want to do another race anyway, just to get some experience. I wouldn't want to jump straight in.
Cool. Alrighty, hey, let's wind the clock back a little bit then, and tell us a little bit about kind of your childhood and how mountain bikes came into your life.
Yeah, so I'm originally from a motorbike family. So motorbike trials is big in my family, like really big. So yeah, like if you win the Irish Grade C Championship, you get the Callaghan Trophy.
Ah, right.
So we're kind of, yeah, we're pretty heavily involved in that. And then my dad always raced motorbike enduros, quite a high level international rider.
Right.
So yeah, I just always grew up around bikes and I rode trials when I was younger. And then I kind of got sick of waiting for my dad to take me out on the trials bike because it's not something you can just do yourself, you know. So I had a mountain bike that I rode to school and just started playing on that, found some dirt jumps, met some people. They said, you know, let's go up the mountains, there's trails up there. And yeah, that was it straight away, just loved it.
Hooked. And was it always the gravity side of it that you kind of enjoyed?
Just everything really, like, so when I started, there wasn't really any enduro, especially in Ireland. So I raced downhill and then I had a hardtail that I used to ride most as an XC bike.
Yeah.
And if there's an XC race on, I do it. If there's a downhill on, I do it. And I just kind of did everything. And then, yeah, once enduro started in Ireland, I just, you know, I thought, geez, this is exactly what I want to do. I'd seen it in Europe and stuff and thought it looked really cool. Uh-huh. And yeah, I did the first year of the Irish series, racing enduro and downhill. And yeah, by the end of that year, I was like, yeah, definitely enduros for me.
And were you quite successful early on in your career, or was it something that had to...
No, not really. Out? Like with downhill especially, like I didn't, you know, I never really put absolutely everything in it. I just kind of worked and raced and, you know, kind of just did it. And yeah, like I tried racing a few World Cups and stuff, but never successfully, and did a few World Champs. But was always a bit half-assed looking back now. And then once enduro came along, I kind of saw that I could do well at it, and that motivated me to really commit everything to it. And uh-huh. Yeah, it's just been a bit of a building process since then, really.
Yeah. So you spent a good while as a privateer on the EWS scene. You were were you a UPS driver at the same time? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It was at the start. I was working in a bike shop, and then I was a UPS driver, and yeah. That was it, yeah.
What, how do you fit that all in? What do you think is the key to doing well as a privateer? Because you've got a lot of stuff to balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to, like, you really have to be committed and motivated. Like, I was, you know, I was working 8 or 9 hours a day and training twice a day, and, like, I didn't do anything else. Like, I literally just trained, worked, slept, and that was it. So, like, social life was gone.
Right.
Any extra money I had for fun or whatever was just gone. So it was literally just all my eggs in one basket. But, you know, I think if you love it enough, it's not as hard as it sounds to do that, because it's what you want to do. So
yeah
it was just kind of, it was what I wanted to do.
And did you have much support around you at that point, like coaching, fitness, that side of stuff? Was that something you looked after yourself, or did you have
so I think I did the first year of the EWS, and then at the end of that season I'd done well, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just riding my bike and racing. And then Chris Comery he trained a few of my friends before and really transformed them, like taking them from average riders to really good riders. So at the end of that season, I sent him an email entitled "Make Me Deadly," and saying, "Yeah, you know, I want to work with you." And then, yeah, started working together for the next season. And yeah, since then, you know, it's been great to have him. Like, he's looked after me so much, and just having that guidance is so valuable. Yeah. Just someone that can kind of take the guessing away and just tell you what to do and when to do it.
And what were the kind of biggest changes in what you were doing from a training perspective when Chris came on board?
It was pretty big. It was night and day, really. Like, as I said, I was really just riding my bike, and that was pretty much my training.
Right.
Whereas then it became way more structured, started doing a lot more gym stuff, a lot more intervals, and a lot more off-the-bike stuff, kind of trying to get the body, you know, in good nick and moving well, able to take hits and all these things with the strength and mobility and nutrition as well, I guess, was a big step.
And did you feel, you know, was there a big, clear difference in your ability to ride a bike as a result of those changes? Did you feel not just fitter but quicker?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like that following season, and there was several times during races where I was like, something would happen, like I'd hit a massive compression or something, and I'd be like, whoa, I wasn't able to take those hits last year.
Interesting.
And it really did make a difference. Yeah. And even like just at a race throughout the day, you know, I used to fade so bad just because of nutrition, or I wouldn't be used to doing such big days, and it just stopped being a problem. Yeah. Like, I was just able to bang out these massive days and know what I was doing, not just hoping I'd survive, but actually be like, right, do this, this, and this, and you'll be strong all day.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it made a big difference.
Cool. How are you working from a nutrition perspective, right? So, Enduro World Series days are big.
Mm.
You're out on the bike 5, 6, 7 hours.
Yeah,
some of the days. You've got to carry stuff when you're away from the pits. What do you use? Is there a strategy that you have, a certain...
Yeah, I think, like, even the other thing is, like, it's not just a big day, it's a big week.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you'll you know, you'll start practicing Wednesday or Thursday. So it's 4 or 5 massive days in a row. And it's Sunday when you really start feeling that, like the last few stages of a Sunday, you're absolutely empty, like you're hanging. So really what you've done during the week and what you've, you know, what you've done off the bike and your nutrition, all those things are so, so important. And yeah, at this point, it's kind of routine for me now to arrive and have, you know, things I'll eat and the drinks I'll have and whatever. And it kind of, yeah, you just kind of go through the motions of it now.
And is that something that people keep kind of secret as an advantage over others, or is it a fairly common?
Yeah, no, it's common.
Yeah.
It's that's the cool thing about Enduro is the vibe. You know, everyone's kind of in it together, and I think there's like a mutual respect between everyone that we're racing the clock, not so much each other. So there's not really any, you know, secretism or mind games or any of that stuff. So, you know, if someone's mixing up an energy drink, you know, you'd have no problem saying, oh, what's that? And they'll tell you what it is and why it's good and why they like it, and then you might go try it yourself. And yeah, it's pretty, everyone's pretty open, really.
It seems really cool looking from the outside in. Mm. You see, you know, people from different teams riding together throughout the day and people helping fix each other's punches. And
yeah, it's awesome. It's so cool. Like, yeah, like I've got so many friends now that I've like from racing that, you know, in a lot of sports, I don't think you get that. A lot of sports, your competitors are your competitors and that's it. Whereas I think we're all a pretty strong group of mates now.
Yeah. And do you think the level of difficulty of the events now kind of helps bring people together? Because you're getting through this as a group of you rather than individuals, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then that toughness, you know, I think someone winning a race or losing a race is, it's going to be decided on what they're doing or what happens on the track. And, you know, if someone beats you, it's like fair play. You've just done better. It's not a, you know, there's no bitterness there or anything like that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, definitely. It feels like it has a good vibe. So, you know, obviously a while as a privateer, working incredibly hard, burning the candle at both ends, I guess. And then Cube obviously came around and you got the opportunity to work with them. How did that happen? Like, how did you personally kind of work your way from privateer to pro? Was it a conscious effort or did you get approached?
No, it was definitely a conscious effort. Like, my dream has always been, you know, two things. One was to make doing what I love, riding a bike, to be my job so that it would be all that I would do. And then after that would be to be world champion. So, you know, the whole time I was grafting away, it was in the hopes that someday this would be what I do for a living. And yeah, that season, I can't remember which season it was actually. I think maybe 2014. Yeah, I'd had a really good year. Like, I'd had a top 10 and I think it was 10th in the overall. So yeah, it was kind of a standout thing for a privateer to be doing so well, you know, living out of a van, getting all these results. So by the time the end of the season started coming, I had quite a lot of interest. And I went to Eurobike that year and had a load of meetings, and it was so bizarre because, like, I'd spent my whole life spending money on the sport and everything had costed me money.
Yeah.
And then you go to Eurobike and have these meetings and you're telling people how much you want them to pay you to do this. So you're like, wait, I'm not going to spend money, I'm going to make money. What? And you almost feel bad asking it. So it was quite really bizarre situation. And we met quite a few different teams and brands at that time. And Cube definitely stood out. It was a team I'd always admired. They had such a professional setup. And Nico Lau was a team leader at the time. And he was a rider I loved to watch. And, you know, he had a cool attitude to racing as well. So it was something I felt like I would fit in well to. And I felt like it was somewhere I could be and stay. Uh-huh. You know, it wasn't like, right, this contract will be great for 2 years and then I'll go somewhere else. It was like, right, I could see myself staying there for, you know, maybe my career. Nice. So, it felt like a good fit.
Yeah. So with the Eurobike stuff, did you get any advice kind of going into that on how to approach it, or, you know, what your value might be, or were you kind of on your own trying to?
No, people were actually really good. Like Jamie Nicol especially, he was one that he'd been through the exact same. He was a privateer and then had the pro team conversations and all that. And he was really good at just telling me anything I needed to know. And yeah, quite a lot of people were really open about it. So it was really, really helpful, because without people giving me advice, I really wouldn't have had a clue.
Yeah, it must be. It's quite high pressure, right? Eurobike.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All the big dogs from the big companies and having to negotiate what you want and how it's going to work.
Yeah, exactly. So it was quite interesting because I had that. So it was Eurobike, and then obviously I was still a privateer, but I just have all these really exciting conversations. And I went to a race in Italy straight away and was totally out of money.
Right.
So we went to the Super Enduro, and it was basically needed to get home from that race. The brake pads had gone in the van, so we're down on the metal. and basically needed to get on the podium to get some prize money to put diesel in the van to go home.
That's the motivation.
So yeah, it was definitely motivation. So yeah, managed, crashed just at the finish, lost the win, got second, but it was enough. And yeah, drove home with no brake pads. Brake pads on the metal. I think I had dinner that night. It was a pizza with leftovers put on top. Like 5 euro margarita pizza. Wow. Like proper scraping the end of the barrel.
So you were you were really pushing it to be able to get to that point then.
Like, yeah, I was totally on the limit. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I managed to get home and carried on. But I still had to, work the next 4 or so months until the new year. So it was still, it was quite bizarre because I'd agreed this deal and yes, I'm going to be a pro, but I'm still living the life of a privateer with no money.
Still got to pay bills.
It's quite a bizarre situation.
Was there ever a point where you were tempted to give up? You know, you're pushing, you're putting all your hours in, you're not seeing your friends, your money's running out, you've got no brake pads.
I had to park the van up after that actually because I couldn't fix the brakes. To be honest, no. Like, it didn't really cross my mind. It was like, just this is what I want to do. And I kind of saw it like, it's not something I'd regret. Uh-huh. Like, taking these years of, I probably should have been in college if I was a normal person and, making a kind of life for myself that way, a career. But I just saw it as, this is something you can only do once. And I won't get, if I do this for 3, 4, 5 years and it doesn't work out, I won't regret it because I'll still look back at it as some of the best times of my life. So, yeah, just cracked on and kept doing it.
Works out well. Mm. So, yeah, tell us a bit about that then. So you come into the next season, you've got, like you say, you've gone from being totally skint.
Yeah,
on one end of the spectrum. Now you're on a big team, pro deal, getting paid to ride your bike.
Mm.
How did that feel, and what were the upsides of being in that position?
Yeah, I think like the training just changed straight away. Like, the recovery time I had compared to before was amazing. Like, I just felt so much better all the time because I'd finish a session and then go sit down for a few hours rather than sit in the van doing deliveries. So it definitely improved my riding, and my fitness jumped up massively straight away. And just being prepared, even like, I'd never done any suspension testing or anything like that. So the start of the season, we did all that testing and team camp and all that. And it was amazing just how much better you can make a good bike feel.
Right.
Like, I went there feeling like, I'm comfortable, I'm not really going to change it, and it's fine.
Yeah.
I had a totally different bike by the end of the week. Like, it was amazing. And yeah, just so many improvements you can make to what you think is already good.
Yeah. Mm. So do you spend quite a lot of time on kind of setup and testing?
Kind of, yeah, but more and more every year, really. You just kind of, you learn what your bike can feel like, and you always want to try make it better and better and better. But I try not to get too fixed on it, because enduros are so varied. Like, you can have your bike set up for stage one, which could be gnarly steep downhill, and then stage two could be flat and pedally, and on a different side of a hill, so a different terrain. So you just kind of need a good general setup that you can ride all day.
I listened to, I think it was on the Vital podcast, you had a little chat with G, and you talked about setting the bike up for when you're fatigued.
Yeah.
Does that pay back? Is that something that is kind of important for the Enduro World Series type approach? So
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Like, I think like in the second half of a stage is where you can really win or lose. Like, everyone can ride the top 2 minutes hard and aggressive, which is when a hard bike would be great.
Yeah.
But then when you start fatiguing, and if it's going to be a long stage, you need to be able to ride the bike when you're absolutely hanging. Like, if you smash it up a 30 second climb and then you're going to drop into something gnarly, and your bike's set up for when you're 100% fresh, you're not really going to be able to put that same energy into the bike to really make the suspension work. So you need to have a bike that you can relax on and still have grip and ride and hang on to.
Interesting. So softer.
Yeah, generally will be a bit softer. Yeah, you know, you don't want to go too crazy, because then when you are going at race pace, you're still pushing hard, so you still need it to be, supportive.
Yeah.
So there is a balance.
Yeah. So the rate curve of the spring, I guess, is kind of key. You want something that's soft in the early phase and then but still got some ramp up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what we're always chasing, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's quite important, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And would that change throughout a weekend then? So, like you say, by the time you get to Sunday, you've had a big week on the bikes. Would you be backing off stiffness of the bike throughout the Saturday, Sunday of a 2 day race, or would you kind of keep it the same?
No, yeah, you kind of keep it the same. You just want to have a manageable, really, like something you can manage. Like, as practice, you don't know where you're going, you're riding blind, so you kind of want it soft for that anyway.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're racing, you're a bit more fatigued, so you'll know where you're going, but you'll be more fatigued, so it'll kind of be the same end result,
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Cool, so you did a bit of winter training in the States with the Athens. What was the thinking behind that? What drove you to take that choice?
Well, yeah, so at Fox Hunt last year, you know, spent the weekend with G and got on pretty well. And then, yeah, he was setting up this training camp himself and Charlie Hatton. And yeah, he was looking for another rider to come and just asked me, did I want to go? And I said, geez, yeah, that'd be, I'd love it. So
good weather.
That was it, really. Like, I think, you know, it worked out well because we're both at a similar level, but in different sports. We're not competitors and we're quite, you know, you can be friendly and competitive about it rather than, you know, you're not competing for the same thing. Yeah. So, yeah, it worked out quite well, actually.
What did you learn from those guys then? Because two similar looking disciplines, but when you look at the kind of the actual demands on the athlete, quite different, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like the riding was really valuable, like just seeing how to approach a track. Like we'd arrive to a track and I'd see something and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, you'd probably pick your way through there and take that low line. And then G would be like, nah, just gap it. You're like, what? And then you'll follow him in and just send it. And you're like, oh, actually, yeah, that's fine. And it kind of taught me how hard you can really ride and how much you can attack, which, yeah, was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, even like in the gym stuff was cool. Like we were always pushing each other and doing little competitions. And it's just always good to, you know, train with different people.
Yeah. So is that something you think you'd do again then? It sounds like a valuable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was enjoyable. Yeah, I would do it again for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to follow G down a downhill track on a trail bike to try and keep up. Fair play.
Yeah, it got pretty scary at times, to be honest.
No doubt. So how's your season been so far? Like, let's go back to the start of the season. So Chile was the first round.
Yeah, yeah. It's been eventful, to say the least. Well, enduros always are eventful. But yeah, it's been up and down. You know, Chile wasn't great for me. Struggled a bit with bike setup and I was kind of playing around with frame sizes. And,
right.
And yeah, just kind of hadn't really found my feet for the start of the season, really. And yeah, just struggled straight off the bat. So that wasn't great. And it wasn't really the result I was dreaming of all winter.
Is that because you've not had the time on the bike or...?
Maybe. I just hadn't had the time. No, well, I had, really. Yeah. Right. Maybe not had the time in kind of race conditions, I guess. Because that's the thing. Our season starts so early. It's so hard to find a pre-season race. Like, the only one I could find was in Italy. And we went and it was raining and snowing. And, yeah, you know, no. It wasn't actually a... It was a great weekend, but it wasn't, you know, a great race practice.
A bit different
situation.
To Chile, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but then quite similar to Colombia.
Well, okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
which
yeah,
was
yeah.
Polar opposite of Chile.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, Colombia was an interesting one. Like that was a crazy place, really cool place, cool people. But yeah, mad race. Like I've never seen dirt that sticky because it rained all night and then it was so hot and humid the next day that by the time we were racing it was just like peanut butter. Like it was crazy.
Yes.
But yeah, it was character building day for sure.
I've heard a lot of people describe enduro days as character building.
Oh yeah, we all have some pretty savage characters by now.
Impressive.
We build them up.
Yeah, it's a tough sport. Definitely. Like it seems to be getting. Yeah. We're talking on the way, but it seems to be getting kind of progressively harder year on year. Bigger days, more climbing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like limits are being pushed for sure. But it's good, you know. I think that brings out the best in a lot of people, and it's. You know, it's meant to be a hard sport, so it's good to see that it is hard.
Yeah. So when you start a season like that, I mean, you come off the back of some really good results, multiple wins. Obviously, you want to be at the very sharp end of the field, and you've shown you can be there, and then you start the season in a way that probably wasn't where you were hoping to be. After an event, what do you do? Do you kind of just shake it off and crack on, or do you kind of analyse what you've done and look for things you can improve? Like, what's your process for like a post-race?
Yeah, definitely analyze it. Yeah, like Chris coaches he's really good at that. Like we'll sit down after a race and he'll probably send me an email with a list of questions of like, how was this good and bad?
Okay.
You know, what did you do well? What did you do badly? Mm-hmm. And then gives me a chance to reflect and think, you know, basically the approach I try to see is why didn't I win if I didn't win? Uh-huh. You know, what did the winner do better than me? And yeah, just look at it in, from every angle, you know, from the moment you arrived to the venue, everything you did, how did that affect your race at the end of the weekend?
So the entire process rather than just that.
Exactly.
The stage part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Not just on the bike, but your preparation, your mental approach, everything.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it gives you a pretty good picture of maybe what went wrong, but also what went right. So you might say, I did something better that I hadn't done in the past and it really benefited me. And then, yeah, by the end of the season, then you'll have a really good idea of what you need to work on or even just between races what you need to work on.
Yeah.
So that's quite useful. And he'll also break down the stages into percentages off the winner. It's kind of like what Roots and Rain do.
Yeah, they've got that new graph, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's really interesting because you might think you've had a brilliant stage and get fifth or whatever, you know. But actually the margin from the win could be massive.
Yeah.
And you might think you've had a bad one and get 10th. But actually you could be closer on that stage to the win. So it's really interesting to see, you know, because you're not... It's so easy to look at your position on the result sheet and just assume your performance off that. But actually, that's only relevant to what everyone else did.
Yeah.
So you could have put down your best run and 10 people actually put down better runs, or you could put down your best and no one did, so you win it.
Yeah.
But those two results will give you such a different view on that performance. So it's quite good to kind of step back and just see how you did. Purely you against you kind of thing.
Interesting. So you do quite a deep dive in corporate terms that I'd use, but you actually go into the data and think about how it all went.
Yeah, exactly. And just try to see where you can improve, really.
Yeah. And I think I've seen it in some riders when they have, you know, they know where they feel they should be and they don't perform to that level, and it builds a frustration throughout the season and they almost push too hard and go beyond it. Whereas you seem to have a very pragmatic and very calm approach to stuff. How do you... where does that come from? Is that just you or
I guess so, yeah. It's quite funny because like my dad would be the opposite, like he'd be a big stress head, like, so you know, like we'll be at a rate, like at the Irish race, you know, I'll come in at lunch and I'll be winning or whatever and he'll be panicking, going mad, and I'll be like, it's all right, just calm down, like I know what I'm doing, it's fine. So it's quite interesting. I guess it's just how I am. I just try to focus on the process and not worry too much on what else is going around and just try to focus on you know, doing my best.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's so easy to, you know, see a result and just start getting frustrated and try override and do all these things. Yeah. So I think you just have to try approach every stage as doing the best you can do on that stage. Yeah.
And have you got any kind of techniques or little mental things that you use to help yourself approach things in that way rather than getting wound up by it? And because whenever I hear the beeps or a countdown to a stage, there's some kind of trigger in my body that messes with my head, and I can't.
Yeah,
I struggle to take that approach that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'd have a few mental cues, like, you know, in the start line, I'll just tell myself like, get loose, and that's something I've done since, you know, forever, really, just to kind of remind, because it's so easy, especially in enduro, to have the approach of I'll just be safe, don't crash, be safe, and you'll just end up riding slow. So you need to actually get to that limit and then stay as close as you can to it. And then as I'll start fatiguing, I'll usually say to myself, heels down, eyes up, to kind of fix my posture, because when you get tired, for me anyway, my heels start kind of stiffening up and raising, and I'll become upright on the bike and hunch my shoulders, and you know, your head starts dropping.
Yeah,
which is, you know, you're 15 minutes into a stage or whatever it is, it's a pretty easy to assume that position, but it's a pretty bad ride position. So if I say to myself, heels down, eyes up, it'll automatically give me a good attack position and I'll start riding well again. And try to do that.
A few little cues that keep you focused. And
it can work. There's negative ones as well. You know, you might just have a moment, you hit a corner and feel weak and you're like, oh, I'm knackered. And all of a sudden you'll start riding like a goon because you've just told yourself you're knackered, so you'll ride like you're knackered. So you do need to kind of keep telling yourself, you know, I'm fine. Crack on, keep going.
Yeah, it's a big mental side to the sport, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, cool. So you mentioned briefly, you know, Ireland, home race, huge, insane crowds.
Mental. Yeah.
And that was your first win, right?
Yeah. That was only my, I think it was my second race pro. Or second or third, my first season of pro anyway. Yeah. And like, yeah, it was insane. Like, I don't think anyone expected me. Like, I remember people asking me before, like, someone said to me before the weekend, like, oh, do you think you could podium? And I kind of quietly knew I could do well.
Yeah.
I didn't actually think I could win it. I dreamt of winning it, but I was like, Jesus, imagine. That kind of thing, you know, it seems so far away. And I think I was definitely a bit of an underdog that day. But yeah, it just went so well. I just, like, I didn't really take in the day at all, to be honest. Like, I was so focused on just doing my own thing. Like, I didn't realize what was happening.
Right.
Like, yeah, I saw the videos after the race and was just like, where were all these people? I didn't see any of these. Like, it was
blocked everything out.
Yeah, it just blocked everything out. Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah.
And what was the reaction from kind of everyone back home? Was there a big after party? Did you get involved in that afterwards? Or?
It was kind of, not really, because the location of the race, there's nowhere close by. There was a bit of an after party, but then all the Irish fans were in work the next day.
Right.
So it wasn't actually as mad as everyone expected it to be. But it was still a good night out. It was still good fun. Like, I had, you know, all my family and the team and all that, so we all celebrated together.
Yeah.
It was good.
Amazing place to get your first win at home. That's
really cool. Oh, man. Like, just to race as a pro at home and have, like, that much support, I was like, before the race even started, I was like, wow, this is amazing just to see how many people want me to do well. And then to win and see as well the reaction of everyone, like how emotional everyone got at the finish and stuff. It was just like, wow, this is insane.
So why do you think there was such a big crowd at that event? As I've never seen a crowd that big at an Enduro World Series event, right?
Mm, yeah, I don't think there has been. Well, maybe in Colombia now. But
Yeah,
that was pretty nuts crowd. But yeah, I think like, for one, you know, in terms of the support I got, like the Irish are so good at just supporting their own. Like you look at McGregor and, you know, any successful sports person we've had that we've really gotten behind.
Yeah.
And then as well, we don't get many big sporting events like that. Like there's never been a mountain bike race of that level in Ireland. Never mind so close to like Dublin and Wicklow is where most of the mountain biking in Ireland is. So that's where, you know, it's close to everyone. So yeah, I think when people heard the race was going to be on, it was just a no-brainer that they were going to be there and making a bit of noise.
Fantastic. And so you came back the next year with knowing you could win. You'd done it the year before. There was a lot of people obviously there to come see you, probably even bigger crowds the second year. Cause
Yeah, definitely
bigger. And there's an expectation, right?
How
did you approach that? Was it any different to the previous year for you?
Well, one thing was, as I said, after the first year, I realised I didn't take any of it in. And I was like, that was such a special day, like the atmosphere and everything, but I didn't really take it in. And like, it was quite bizarre because after the first day, I was so disconnected from everything that was happening that when I won, I was just like, I was still disconnected. So I didn't actually like feel it fully. So then the second year, I was like, right, I really want to take this in and experience it because, you know, it's something that you don't get many chances to have such an amazing experience. So yeah, I tried to take it in more and enjoy it a bit more. And yeah, I definitely did. I really enjoyed the second year. But I think the approach to my riding was pretty much the same, you know, just focus on the process, do your best, and that was it.
So no, you didn't feel any additional pressure to take the win once you'd shown you could do it?
Yeah, not really. Like I felt, you know, I definitely felt more expectation and all that, but I just tried to kind of brush it off. And the way I saw it was that there was no one saying you have to win or we don't like you or, you know, anything like that. It was just people wanting me to do well and it was only positive energy. So I just tried to use that to push me in a positive way.
Yeah, awesome. Mm. And then that season as well, I think, was when you took the Madeira win.
That was last season.
17, yeah, last season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's is that your only win outside of Ireland?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that race, because it was, from what I saw, incredibly slippery.
Yeah, that place. It was quite bizarre. I was actually quite surprised to do so well there, because in the past, anytime I've ridden that kind of terrain that's so slippery, I just put on the brakes, I freeze up, and I'm like, nah, too dangerous, hate it, I'm scared. Get me out of here. But then when it's race conditions, it was just like, it's a race, crack on, forget about the fear kind of thing.
Yeah.
And just let the bike dance around. Yeah, it was a mad race. Like the attrition of that race was pretty insane.
Right.
Like, I think starting day two, I was third or fourth and quite a bit off the lead. And then, yeah, the guys in front of me just started having mechanicals. And
because that was the one Jesse was leading after the first day, I think, wasn't he?
And yeah, Jesse had a big lead. Yeah. And then yeah, near the start of one of the stages, there was just a jump with a rock on the back of the landing and he just landed square on top of the rock and boom, that was it. Yeah, shame because he was really flying that day. Like he was the quickest guy that weekend.
Yeah.
As everyone says, that's the reason.
Well, this is it, yeah. And how much of enduro is that? Is it in your head? Because you've got to get the bike through, right? You've got, is it one set of wheels, one frame, one fork? Like we've got stickers on, you can't change it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You've got to make it through the weekend.
Yeah, and then even like if you were to get a puncture or something, you're probably out on your own.
Yeah.
So you have to fix that yourself and carry stuff for that as well.
Does that ever cross your mind? Like, oh, I won't push through this section because it's likely to break something? Or are you attacking the whole time?
Well, you try to have your bike set up that you can attack the whole time. So your bike, you know, like I wouldn't run light tires or anything like that. I'd stick to the heavier stuff. But yeah, there definitely is, yeah. There's sections where you could potentially lose a lot more than you could gain by going full YOLO through it. So, yeah, definitely.
Back off occasionally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how was the last round then? I've seen, again, some footage and it looked scary.
Yeah, I think, like, the videos did show the gnarliest parts. Like, the gnarliest parts were extremely gnarly.
Yeah.
But I think, as a whole, it was a great race. It was, it was classic French, you know, really technical, tight, like, proper bike skill required kind of thing. Like it was definitely it required a hell of a bike rider to do well there, which I think is really cool.
And
I'd much rather race that kind of stuff than, you know, maybe some of the artificial stuff we see at these down the races. So yeah.
Yeah, fair play. And the rest of the season ahead of you. It's a long season. How are you feeling kind of coming out of, like I said, maybe not exactly what you'd want the first few races, but in a good place, ready for more?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel like I'm riding well. I feel like we're on a new bike this year and I feel really good on it. And, you know, I feel strong and fit. And, like, I feel like the pace has been there all year. It's just been having problems at each race. So, yeah, definitely. You know, we've done 3 rounds. We've got 5 left. And, yeah, I definitely want to make the next 5 count.
Yeah. And is there any round out of that you're particularly looking forward to? Are there places that you're stoked to go and ride?
Well, it's quite exciting. Like, the next one's a new venue in Austria, Slovenia, on the border. So that looks really good. I've seen some videos. It looks like a real cool place. And then after that, you have the Twil, which is one of my all-time favourite places to ride and race. So, yeah, that's going to be really cool. Looking back forward to getting back there on the new bike as well, because it'll suit better than the old one we had.
Okay.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see the difference, you know, between the bikes there.
What is the main difference from a riding perspective between the old bike and the new?
Quite big. Like, we were on a 29er 140 before, and it was kind of, you know, it was originally spec'd as an all-mountain bike, so it was kind of a lightweight bike for what we were doing on it racing. Yeah. So new ones, yeah, longer, stiffer, slacker, more travel. It's, yeah, it's a beast.
Did it take much to adjust to? Because
the
geometry change is quite significant, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah. But I genuinely just hopped on it and felt at home. Like, I think we got it just before finale last year, and I had 2 or 3 days on the bike. And then raced finale. And I had a good race that weekend. You know, I had a puncture and still a good result. So,
yeah, that's a good sign if the bike feels comfortable without too much time on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we've made great improvements even since then. So I feel even better again. Yeah.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got a few questions that we ask everybody. So we'll hit those up. There's 3 of them. The first one is, if our listeners had £100 to spend to help improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on? It can be anything. It doesn't have to be bike componentry. It could be training.
I don't know what the going rate is, but if you can afford it with £100, a coaching session.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see so many people spend money on bike parts when, you know, a bit of time spent paying attention to your technique and having someone tell you how to improve can really, really be worth the money.
Yeah. Even the heels down, look up thing is pretty invaluable, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, everyone can, like, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to go for a coaching lesson myself even.
I've said before on this, I've benefited a lot from it. I was complacent, I guess, and been riding a long time. Didn't think I needed it, but I definitely did.
Yeah,
and it does, I can make have a more difference. For sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. No, you're never too good to learn from someone.
Very true. And then if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
Oh, I'd probably just say keep your mouth shut. Probably that, yeah.
Have you got yourself into trouble then, back in the day?
No, I think I just probably talked more than I should have. Probably still do, though, to be honest.
Nothing wrong with that. Cool, and then the final question. If you could pick any rider from downhill, enduro, cross country, if you like, to have a coaching session from, who would it be, why, and what would you want to learn?
Whoa, that's a big one. From all time?
Yeah, from whenever you like.
God,
you can have more than one if you want.
I'm kind of deciding between Vuljos or Sam Hill.
Okay,
because you know, Vuljos is so analytical, he's so in tune with bikes and techniques and riding and all that, and he's got such a vast knowledge of the sport. Will be quite interesting to see what you can learn from him. And then Sam Hill's just a beast, so. But he'd probably just tell me to change my pedals to do more insights.
Is there a specific kind of aspect to Sam's riding that you'd want to try and get from him?
The efficiency, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you see him ride in a race and he just looks like he's using very little energy just through his line choice and how well he's riding. That's definitely something I'd love to inherit.
Interesting. So is that like a kind of a lightness through section or just carrying speed? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, thing? Just his finesse. Yeah.
So that's what you think is his key to the success that he's been having the last couple of years, then, that efficiency, or is there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, like you say, it's key, isn't it? Over a weekend of huge amounts of riding, then.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to make a difference.
Yeah. It's quite interesting watching the race, like, the different techniques in everyone. Like, everyone's got such a different approach to how they see a stage, but at the end, you'll all end up on a pretty similar time.
I've never been able to get my head around, if you could overlay 2 riders, you know, maybe the top 2 riders, would they kind of be together the whole way down the track, or would it keep changing leads?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing that everyone's making up different amounts of time in different places.
Yeah, and everyone is having good sections and bad sections as well. Like, through a race, you make so many mistakes and do so many things. It was quite interesting. The last couple of years, we had the data analysis from EWS, where we all had GPSs on our bikes. And you could see exactly that through the stages. It wasn't super detailed, but you could see who was fast where, which was, really interesting.
And have they stopped doing that this year?
Yeah, they have, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I did one as well in the past with Napier University in Edinburgh, where we had these accelerometers on our bikes and bodies.
Ah, with Lewis Kirkwood.
Yeah, Lewis Kirkwood. Oh, so interesting. Like, because a few of us wore them through the races, so we could, compare them, and you could see exactly who was doing what and whose bike was taking more energy than their body and all these things. And yeah, it was really, really interesting.
Yeah. So is that something you'd ever, ever look into doing more of, taking some instrumentation out with you at a race? And
yeah, definitely. Like, you see the motocross guys now all have these lit pro systems on their helmets, and I think that's helped them massively. Like, it's, they just go in for a practice session, look at the app on their phone or whatever it is, go, right, that's the they're all the fastest lines, and that's it, they're set for the race. So I think if that technology improves, like, that one doesn't really work in a forest because it's GPS, so if that technology improved for mountain biking, then I think it'd definitely be seen in a lot more of it.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, we'll let you get on with the rest of your day. Mm-hmm. But if people want to find out more and kind of keep up with your season, where's the best place on social media to find you?
Got to be the gram, Instagram, Greg_Callahan.
Okay, cool. We'll put a link in the show notes as well so people can find it.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for your time. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Look forward to seeing you smashing it out a few races.
Thanks very much. And thanks for having me on.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend in what is currently still sunshine at Fort William.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Awesome. Good stuff. Cheers, man.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for another episode. Really hope you enjoyed it. If you're enjoying what we're doing, help out, support the podcast, and head over to our web store, downtimepodcast.com/shop, and grab yourself a t-shirt. They're organic, fair trade, real nice quality material, good fit. Hope you love them. Everyone that has bought one so far, thank you very much. It means a lot. Really appreciate it. Also, if you've got time, head over to iTunes and leave us a review there. It's really nice to hear from you and know that you love what we're doing. So, get in touch. All right, until next time, get out and ride.